This is for the men who never settle. The ones who believe only quitters end a game in a tie. The type of guys who choose the bar with the biggest TVs to overcompensate for theirs at home. This is the Lodge mentality. This is Twin Peaks.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. At the end of the segment, we're going to give something away, so be ready. The phone number is 913-3810-810, but don't call yet. You don't even know what we're giving away yet. What are you trying to call for? Just wait. End of the segment. It'll be a chance to win. Right now, you're a winner because you listen to Mike McFarland talking about baseball. What's up, Mac? How are you?
How's the positivity today, Stephen?
Very good, and I was very excited to talk about Chris Taylor's performance this morning because he hit three home runs last night to help the Dodgers avoid elimination and send that to Game 6. 11 times it's happened, 11 players. Do you know who's one of them?
That would be Luther.
That's
that would
right.
be George Brett, our own guy, and nothing better than that performance he had. Still love those classic blue unis. Those are still good-looking unis.
I always enjoy when George Brett is brought into the conversation when someone does something he did in the postseason, because that gives me the excuse to mention that he hit three home runs in one playoff game, one of only 11 people to do that. And just to throw out there, in all of his postseason games, 43 postseason games, 184 plate appearances, his slash line was 337, 397, 627, with an OPS over 1,000. So, Mac, he was pretty good in the playoffs, wasn't he?
Yeah, and you wonder which morons didn't vote him in first ballot.
Right.
That's always my question. Yeah, that's kind of the definition of clutch Hall of Famer right there.
And you're right. They are indeed morons. Mike McFarland is our guest. All right, Mac, so we're talking about this because Chris Taylor hit the three home runs, and now this goes to Game 6. And I'll be honest with you, I mean, it's been like a roller coaster the past couple of games. I'm watching Game 3, and the Braves are just a few outs away from taking a commanding 3-0 lead, and then Bellinger hits his home run, Mookie Betts has a game-winning hit, and you're thinking, oh boy, the Braves lost their chance here. Now the Dodgers are going to really pour it on and take the series. But then the Braves bounced back and won the next game in impressive fashion. So they were up 3-1. And then last night, the Chris Taylor show, it's 3-2. The Braves are still one game away from advancing. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, let's start. Is there bigger front runners fan-wise than the Los Angeles Dodgers fan base?
Did you like the shot of I mentioned Game 3.
1,000 cars exiting?
They were hitting. They got the hell out of there quick in that seventh inning. I mean, it was a parade.
You guys ever tried to drive in Los Angeles?
That's right. See, there it is.
Yeah, well,
I mean, they were gone.
I get that part. Yeah, I get that part, but crying out loud. Start with the first two games, back-to-back walk-offs in Atlanta. Then the third game where the Dodgers come back in the eighth inning. It has been a fantastic series to sit and watch up until, you know, the last two games of, they beat up on the Dodgers bullpen game. But then going in last night, you got stud Max Fried on the mound, and the Dodgers weren't having any of it and came out and put a thumping, in potentially their last home game in front of said Dodger fans. So now you got to go back to Atlanta. You got Ian Anderson on the mound. They got Scherzer and Bueller in their last two games set up. So the same thing happened last year. The Braves were up 3-1. The Braves remember it well. Yes, would have been nice to close it out there. But I think the difference this year is the fans in the stands. You know, last year they were playing at Texas Stadium, whatever the hell that thing's called this week. So, I mean, it's going to be different with the fan base. So Ian Anderson against Max Scherzer, who, had looked tired, didn't have the same snap that he did after closing out the first series against the Giants or whoever, but anyway, didn't look good in his first start against the Braves. Hopefully the Braves can jump on him, get the crowd momentum going, and close this damn thing out. Because trust me, it is in their mind that they were up 3-1 last year. and the Dodgers roared back and put a beat down on them to win the whole thing.
We've seen the Dodgers use their pitching staff in a variety of different ways in the postseason, and some people have wondered if they should be criticized for the way they've used some of their starting pitchers in unconventional ways. You mentioned Max Scherzer closing the series out. I mean, look, put your best guy on the mound and get that series done. I could see that. But even, you know, the Urias, and people have wondered if that's affected their performance. What have you thought about the way the Dodgers have approached this postseason from a pitching standpoint?
Well, it's the way the game is right now. But then again, when you have guys like Gratterall throwing 100, 102 mile an hour sinkers, I think he's gone through at least six bats in his couple of outings, just exploding them. They have some tremendous arms down there in the bullpen, so I don't really have if I got those horses down there training, and then Jensen, Kenley seems to have his stuff back. They just got power arm after power arm and just filthy stuff coming out of that pen. I have no problem with it whatsoever. So it's going to be a tough job. Ian Anderson got beat up pretty good in his last start against the Dodgers, but he was wound up. His fastball was up. He needs to get that changeup working. He has a Lucas Giolito-type changeup that really wasn't doing much to keep the hitters off balance. And, you know, when you can throw a Hall of Famer out there like Albert Pujols against a left-handed pitcher of Freed's caliber, and he gets a couple hits, that'll definitely ignite your offense. And then what Turner did, it wasn't like any of those were wall scrapers either. Those balls were absolutely crushed. It's going to be a fun Saturday and Sunday. Hopefully just Saturday the Braves can close it out, but it's going to be a lot of stress, a lot of pressure, and someone's going to step up and be the star of this NLCS.
So, we know the personal connection you have with Kevin Seitzer and pulling for the Braves in that regard. We were talking with Buster about the way they've kind of been able to assemble that outfield through the course of the season. And I'm kind of curious if you've had any talks with Kevin about, like, what it's like as a hitting coach when all of a sudden you get, like, new guys dumped in your lap in the middle of the season. You didn't get to work with them in spring training or any of that. And look, I know these guys are pros, so it's not like he's got to teach them how to hit or anything like that, but I'm just curious if you got any insight from Kevin on what it was like, kind of the way they put this team together during the middle of the season, especially in the outfield for the Braves.
Well, with, you know, they knew Duvall coming over. They, you know, the year before he was with the Braves. Soler, we had talked about before. You know, when he got him, I said, look, the guy's starting to find his swing the last couple weeks here in Kansas City, and he has done a tremendous job for them. But the guy he was most excited about was Rosario, and obviously he's having a tremendous postseason. He goes, I haven't seen hands on a guy like this in a long, long time. Just the fact he gets up there and the ball is elevated or in the zone, he's going to find a way to get the barrel on it. So he was hurt for, what, the first month or so. They traded for him, got him, didn't know necessarily what they had, but we remember him from just beating the snot out of the Royals, you know, a couple years ago when he was with the Twins, just having a monster season, knowing what kind of hitter he was. You know, just to find those Anthopoulos, the GM, made those deals. Lose Acuna, you go out and get a brand new outfield, and they've just been tremendous assets coming down the stretch, clinching the division, and they've been big, huge pieces of their offense here in the postseason.
All right, so I guess I'm guessing you're picking the Braves. What about in the American League? The series is back on again tonight as the Astros host the Red Sox. The Astros up 3-2 with Luis Garcia on the mound and Eovaldi on the mound for the Red Sox.
Every time you count the Red Sox out, which I've done numerous times, you know, they throw up 5 home runs, 11 runs, and you're like, well, here we go again. But you talk about another young hitter, Alvarez, coming to the rescue against Chris Sale, of all people, and going oppo for fun off of him. Just a tremendous young hitter. Talent just oozes out of this kid and really lifted them up in that last game. It's going to you know, Eovaldi is just as filthy as you can get, and the Astros pitcher is the same way. So you could expect an off night and a lot of runs scored, but I'm thinking this is going to be a lot tighter of a game going into tonight, and I think the Red Sox win it at home, and I think you're going to have a couple of championship series coming down to Game 7.
Mike McFarland's been our guest. All right, Mac, I know Keith Law really pissed off a lot of people in Kansas City when he was tweeting out his top 10 for AL MVP and didn't have Salvador Perez in it.
Yeah, I was one of them.
Right there. Yeah, we were all one of them. And so, and he shouldn't even be considered top 10. I know this isn't the MVP, but I was glad to see that the MLBPA tweeted out yesterday that the finalists for the Players' Choice Awards, AL Outstanding Player of the Year, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Shohei Ohtani, and Salvador Perez. So the Player's Choice, he's one of the three finalists for the American League's Outstanding Player, and he absolutely deserves to be one of those finalists.
Absolutely. I mean, and again, it comes from the player, so consider the source when you're finding those things out, and there's a sense of pride when your peers, the teammates and players that you play against that see you on a consistent basis and see the job that you have done and the fear that you strike against opposing pitchers are the ones that throw you in the mix. There's no greater reward than the monster season Salvi had to be recognized by his peers and players in the league the year that he had. And they're like, oh, hell yes, this guy needs to be in this top player discussion. So I think if you ask anybody, if it comes from the players rather than the writers and things along those lines, the journalists, give me the players that respect me, who I am as a player. I think Salvi'd say, hell yeah, I'll take this one.
Mac, you're the man. Thanks for talking baseball with us. We'll talk to you next week.
Have a good weekend.
That's Mike McFarland. We'll take a break. When we come back, Nate Bucati is going to give you something out of his pocket.
Wow.
Back after this on WHP.
Left my nuts out there on that mound tonight. That's for damn sure.